If you stick around Prince of Peace long enough, you're going to hear a prayer that we say around here a good bit. Lord, send us priests. Lord, send us holy priests. Lord, send us many holy priests. I picked up this custom from the parish I attended when I was living in Paris, Saint-Eugène. They prayed this prayer every single day. And lo and behold, they had so many boys going off to the seminary that they had at least one first mass a year. The parish had developed a culture of vocations, and this one parish produces more vocations than all of the other parishes of Paris combined. I want you to think about that. That is incredible. But how does this happen? Is it just a fluke? Well, obviously, a vocation is, first of all, a divine call from God himself and verified by the church for a young man or woman to serve in a particular way. He can and does call all sorts of people and for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes he chooses the people least likely to even seem to have a vocation. There's no reason by nature or nurture why a Baptist kid from West Greenville who didn't even know a Catholic growing up should now be your parish priest, but God called, and I answered. There's some vocation stories which are really incredible. How did St. Augustine go from being a womanizing wordsmith pagan to be one of history's most celebrated bishops and theologians? But vocations are not always such dramatic stories. Thousands, even millions of men and women have offered themselves to the Lord to be consecrated to his service. And we're ordinary, simple Christians. So is there something that can give us a clue as to how we can develop a culture of vocations? The story of Samuel is instructive. Remember that his mother Hannah was barren and prayed to the Lord for years to be able to have a child. Samuel's vocation starts with his mother. First of all, she was open to life. I want you to think about how that openness to life is so important. How many potential priests and nuns have never seen the light of day because they were aborted or contracepted out of existence? And not just to mention priest and religious, but someone who might have found the cure for cancer, scientists, legislators, governors, doctors, lawyers, all kinds of things. Second, Hannah went through the crucible of suffering in her very femininity and motherhood. Because she suffered, her heart was open to compassion and love that she could hand on to her children. Had she been self-absorbed or self-indulgent, she would never have been a model for anyone, least of all the child God granted her to conceive. Third, Hannah was perseverant in prayer. What we know of this woman from the books of Samuel is that she spent a lot of time and energy in faithful, confident union with God in prayer. Fourth, when Hannah was graced to have a son, she didn't keep him for herself, but immediately offered him to God as a sacrifice. You know, I can't imagine how happy she must have been to finally have a child that she had longed for so many years, but she didn't want to keep him for herself. She immediately offered God's gift back to God and brought him to the temple to live from his earliest years, surrounded by prayer and praise. I really can't think of a better model besides Joseph and Mary for parents who want to create a culture of vocations in their domestic church, in their homes. Our Christian parents have to be open to life, willing to suffer, persevere in prayer, and offer sacrifice to God if they're to develop this culture of vocation. Sometimes we wonder why we have so few priests and nuns nowadays. But priests and nuns to serve the church don't come out of nowhere. They come from the domestic church. They come from your families. If a family is not open to life, then how are they ever going to be fruitful? If mom and dad think more about comfort and want only earthly gifts for their children, how can their children learn that true love and happiness which comes by the way of the cross? If parents and children don't go to Mass every Sunday, if they don't pray together as a family every day and every night, if God is not the center of their lives, how can God bless them with the abundant graces that come through prayer? And finally, if mothers and fathers are not willing to consecrate their children to God and raise them up in the house of God, and not just on the sports fields or music halls or entertaining them, how will those children grow up to be men and women of faith? Now, everything is possible with God, true. And the stories of the saints are filled with courageous people like St. Francis and St. Clare or St. Thomas Aquinas, whose parents were totally opposed to the idea of their offspring entering religious life, and who made great saints despite the narrowness of vision of those that gave them natural life. But again, the more our domestic churches, our homes, resound with the laughter of children and the joyful prayer of praise, the more families will become holy and the more vocations will appear. Think about Samuel. You know, he's not some kind of daydreamy kid. He hears something. He does not automatically assume it is God. He's clever enough to rule out the ordinary and the obvious. He's not seeking some kind of cathartic religious experience. He hears a voice, and he brings it to the attention of his spiritual father. He doesn't try in pride to figure it out on his own. He brings it to the wise priest Eli, and Eli gives him the best spiritual direction money can't buy. Tell the voice, "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." Samuel is open to the sacred, not because he's trying to channel it. He's just simply open and listens. And he's able to do so because from his earliest years, he was formed in the house of God. The distractions of the world, which are so vain and so fleeting, they have no hold, no power over him. His parents and the priests saw that he was a gift from God and special. And so they had the sense to protect him as much as they could from the evil of the world. Now for Eli, remember, this comes as a revelation. He tells Samuel that his own sons were wicked and that they would die because of it. And it happened just as he said. Eli regrets that his own children had been poisoned by worldliness. But Eli still rejoices that Samuel chooses the music of the sacred over the profane noise of sin. You know, I think our families at Prince of Peace are more than capable of producing children who know how to listen to the Lord. I know we can produce vocations to the priesthood and religious life. But we have to make the right choices to encourage the kind of culture which promotes the ability to listen to God. We have to restore the sacred in our liturgy, in our domestic church, in everything we do. We must become increasingly deaf to the sirens of the world and their short-lived pleasures. We must turn toward the Lord and let Him speak to us and then obediently do what He asks. We have so many children and young people right here at home who aren't all that different than Samuel. Will we help them to hear the Lord calling them to consecrate themselves as a gift to Him? I think we can.